This is one of the more familiar sounds of recycling in Kansas City. But there's a lot more to it than glass, plastics, paper, and aluminum. Here at the Avenues of Life Job Training Center warehouse, mattresses are stacked one on top of the other almost to the ceiling. This is the only mattress recycling facility in Missouri. Andre Jones has been the program director here since it all got started about 3 years ago.
When I'm talking to the guys, I say you have to learn the material. That's the main thing. And you can't go into every mattress thinking you're going to deconstruct it the same, because like I say, there's no two mattresses that's alike.
Andre trains workers like Joe Lockridge. Joe cuts open mattresses and separates all the pieces. Wood parts will be turned into mulch. Foam and cotton can be turned into that padding they use in carpets.
I grew up in the projects, and in the projects, you know, there's mattresses everywhere, on the ground and backyards and ponds and lakes. And I mean, just to be able to clean up and help our environment, not only, you know, is it helping our environment, you know, you feel good about that. You know, I'm actually doing something good.
Last year, Avenues of Life recycled 50,000 mattresses, diverting about 1,300 pounds of waste from Missouri's landfills. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to get beyond the curbside for a close look at how Kansas City is recycling. We'll get to know a little bit about how we went from nothing, I mean seriously, no recycling program, to where we are today. And we'll also find out how much more we could be doing. Short answer, a lot. But first, is there something you want to recycle but don't know where or how? Call us up. Tell us what the item is. And if anyone knows the answers, today's guests really should. 816-235-2888. That number again, 816-235-2888. Tell us about the thing you need to dispose of, and we'll try to find a way for you to recycle it instead of sending it to the landfill. You can also tweet us with your item. We're at KCURCST. Let's start by talking to Matt Riggs. He's the Recycling Outreach Coordinator for the Mid-America Regional Council. And Matt, how would you say Kansas City is doing today, relatively speaking, when it comes to recycling?
Well, it's doing better than it did in the past, definitely. But we're at about 7 pounds of trash per person per day, which equals over a ton per year. So the good thing is recycling is up. More people have curbside recycling. More people are using drop-off options than ever before. But we still have a long way to go. So that's where we're at.
What about relative to other cities?
Well, here in the Kansas City region, we don't really have any numbers because there aren't any laws or regulations saying report to us exactly how much you are recycling. However, we do get the amount of waste generated. We track that. And so by that, we can extrapolate how much we're creating. And our guess is that the overall national recycling rate is around 34 to 35%. We're probably overall as a region down in the 20%. So some cities may be higher than that. As a region, we're probably down in the 20s. So like if you live on the coast, say Boston or San Francisco, where they have a little bit better, more robust programs, they're probably recycling more than we are here in the metro area.
What's more robust about those programs?
Well, for instance, like San Francisco has a 3-bin system. So out there they have trash like we do, recycling like we do, but they also have a green waste bin, which takes all their yard waste and all their food waste. And since that contributes about 20 to 30% of your average household waste, that's that much more that gets recycled curbside in San Francisco. So that's one way that they're a step ahead out there.
So that, would you say that's the main way? Or are there other things that we should also be paying attention to?
Well, different cities have – different areas have ordinances and requirements. So if a city has more ordinances on the books about what the requirement – like if they have mandatory recycling, or if they have pay-as-you-throw, or they require haulers to report – what they're recycling back to them. So it's really all about kind of the rules and the political situation in that area and what's required of haulers and recycling centers. So the more regulations and ordinances you have that are progressive, the more information you're going to have. So,
how big a role does curbside recycling play in the overall recycling picture here in Kansas City?
It plays a pretty big role. That we have 119 cities in the 9-county metro area, and it's different in every city. So that makes it complicated. But curbside is easily the best option because it's really the most convenient. It's a matter of throwing your can or paper or something in the separate bin and putting it at the curb. It doesn't get much easier than that. And I know that in our recent surveys that we've done, curbside recycling is definitely up. You're always going to have more people recycle when they have a curbside option versus if they have to drive miles away to a drop-off facility.
What happens to the stuff we put in our recycling bins? Where does it go? Like, I just put a plastic juice bottle in a recycling bin this morning. What's going to happen to that?
It'll be picked up by a recycling truck. Sometimes those trucks look just like trash trucks, so people shouldn't be confused, like, oh, it's all going to the landfill. Basically, it's taken from your curb and whatever truck picks it up to a material recovery facility. And at that facility, it is dumped out and the materials are sorted into their respective waste streams like paper, plastic, metal. They're sorted both manually and automatically through machinery. And then they get put in like 1,000-pound, 2,500-pound bales, and then they're shipped off to distributors, and then they get... Basically, from that point, they go to manufacturers that make new stuff out of the stuff that we've recycled.
What about the stuff that doesn't make it into our recycling bins? One of our reporters, Suzanne Hogan, did a story that some of our listeners might have heard on Morning Edition. She found out that there are a lot of what you call partial recyclers out there, people who only recycle a small percentage of what they could be. What are some of the things you most typically see ending up in the trash, even though they're recyclable?
Well, if I'm out walking or running in my neighborhood, I see all kinds of stuff. Recently, I saw a broom handle. I saw a furnace filter sticking out of a recycling bin. So what it comes down to is people are...
So those are things that shouldn't be in there?
Shouldn't be in there. What I call it is, or what one of the industry terms is, wishful recycling. So wishful recycling kind of comes down to it has a recycling symbol on it or on some part of it. It says this item is recyclable or made from recycled content. And based on that, people think, oh, I can throw it in the bin. Maybe they're just unsure. I don't know if it's recyclable or not. I'll throw it in there. It'll probably get recycled. Maybe they really hope it is, or in some cases, maybe they know it's not recyclable, but they figure somewhere down the line somebody's going to recycle it. So really, the issue is more contamination. A lot of stuff gets in our recycling bins that shouldn't be in there, and that negatively affects the value and quality of the recyclables.
So what are some of the ways people can recycle that go beyond curbside recycling's capacity? We heard just at the beginning of the show about mattress recycling at Avenues of Life. Tell me about other things. I know about Ripple Glass and Restore. Maybe tell us about those to start.
Sure. Well, Ripple Glass, for several years, we haven't been able to dispose of glass curbside for many issues, for many reasons. But Ripple Glass is a local glass recycler. And it's really an interesting story because it's a closed loop. So basically, they're taking glass bottles, beverage containers, those kind of things, and recycling them. And they sell them to Owens Corning, which makes it into wall insulation. So that's the full recycling process right here in the metro area. Ripple Glass has giant purple collection dumpsters all over town. So everybody pretty much has pretty close access to good drop-off recycling. What was the other area you were interested in?
Restore.
Restore, yeah.
That's an approach that I don't think people necessarily think of as quote-unquote recycling,
right.
But it's very intuitive.
Right. It's more reuse than it is recycling. Many years ago, we had a Habitat Restore start here. And basically what they take are new and surplus are gently used building materials. So if you think, okay, building materials, that's pretty broad. Well, if you think of the last time you were in a home building supply store or your hardware store, think of all the thousands of items they have in there. If you have a gently used version of that item or a surplus version of any of those items, Habitat Restore will take that. And the good thing is it not only keeps it out of the landfill, but the proceeds from those sales go to benefit Habitat for Humanity, and we're all familiar with what they do in terms of building houses for low-income people. And then,
what is the weirdest thing you've ever seen at Habitat Restore?
The weirdest thing I've ever seen. I haven't been to Habitat Restore in a while, but they get some weird stuff, you know, like a pink toilet, you know, or some stuff from the 60s or 70s that you're thinking, wow, that really, somebody really decorated their home with that at one time. So.
I like the remainders of wallpaper.
Yeah?
It's just a personal favorite.
Well, yeah. There are some very lovely designs of wallpaper in our past. But
I mean, I think people have at least a vague sense of how it might affect the planet if we keep sending tons of trash to the landfill. But how does it affect our city? Are there specific local impacts of excess waste? Things that are already happening, possibly?
You mean like negative impacts?
Well, I guess that's the kind of impact I would imagine. But if there's a positive impact locally of excess waste, I'd love to hear that too.
People often think of recycling as it's something that's just good for the earth. And what they forget is that it's also something that's good for our health, and it's very good for our local economy. So in terms of the local economy, we just had a study done this past year, and it estimated that in 2015 in the 14-county statistical area, recycling contributed to creation of 6,250 jobs. And to give you some context, that's larger than public utilities, chemical manufacturing, highway, street, and bridge construction. It pulled in $214 million in wages and $58.5 million in tax revenue for state and local governments. So it has a pretty high economic impact that people often don't think about. And also there's the health impact. I'm sure the last time you threw your juice container in your recycling bin, you weren't thinking, I'm doing something good for my health today. But when you think about it, everything that we use in a given day, whether it's the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the car we drive, all requires lots of natural resources to make, requires a lot of energy to make, and most of all, it creates a lot of pollution in our atmosphere. And so all that pollution affects the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat. And by recycling, you're greatly reducing the amount of pollution that's going into our earth. And so there is a definite health aspect to it as well.
I guess I usually just think if I were a better person, I would have juiced my own fruits and vegetables and there would have been no container and there would have been no plastic to begin with. But
right. Well, I recently read a story. There's a store that's in another part of the country that's actually selling everything in bulk. So you can take your jars and bags and boxes in and bulk it yourself and take it out. So it's basically a packageless, containerless. You provide the durable packaging and containers and pick it up and take it out. So that is happening. It's just slowly.
Matt, I'm going to get back to some of the statistics on what's going on in Kansas City right now, but we've got some callers, and I don't want to keep them waiting too long, so we'll do our first round of I want to recycle this, how can I do it, okay?
Sure.
Let's talk to Kelly and Shawnee. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, thank you. One of my concerns is our neon or fluorescent tubes. We have 4-foot fixtures in our basement, and I can't find anybody to take those tubes. I've called the Johnson County Hazardous Waste. Nobody seems to know.
Huh. Okay, so, well, you're in Johnson County, so you have a couple options for fluorescent bulbs. If they're the long tube kind, they accept those at the Johnson County Household Hazardous Waste Facility, and you can also take them to the Olathe Hazardous Waste Facility. Both of those take both the long tubes and the short squiggly kind, the compact fluorescent bulbs.
Are there hazardous waste facilities all over the city, in different areas of town?
Yeah. On the Kansas side, each county has one that all residents in that county can use for free. And on the Missouri side, it's slightly more complicated, but there are options for all the Missouri side communities. It just depends on if they're members or it gets a little more complicated. But yes, there are options for that.
Let's talk to Andrea on the plaza. Hi, Andrea. What are you hoping to recycle?
Hi, I just bought a new set of knives, and my prior set has some broken handles. My husband and I are debating what to do with the broken set of knives.
So are the broken handles wood or plastic or?
No, I think it's combined. Okay. There's metal and some plastic pieces in the handle.
Right, right. Well, that would generally be a scrap metal issue. There's a number of scrap metal dealers around town that literally take any kind of metal. A number of the drop-off recycling facilities around town also have a scrap metal bin where you can drop those off. You can just throw them in there. They take all kinds of scrap metal from around the house. So if you have broken silverware like that, I would say that's probably your best option. But anything that's still, you know, usable and in fairly good shape, you could definitely donate to a thrift store or charity like that.
So thank you, Andrea. We have a couple of questions that have been tweeted at us. Judy wants to know what to do with styrofoam.
Styrofoam is very problematic in our area. Basically, any kind of styrofoam that's had contact with food or beverages, so like egg cartons, meat trays, your takeout containers, coffee cups, anything that's had contact with food or drinks is not recyclable. So it has to go in the trash. It's low value. It's contaminated. It's very hard to, I mean, you could load a 53-foot semi full of styrofoam. You could probably still lift it yourself. It's hard to ship. And then if you have stuff like the big blocks that come in like a new TV or microwave or styrofoam peanuts, there's a couple options for those in the metro area, like styrofoam peanuts. You know, you can take to some shipping places, like UPS stores will occasionally take them. And there's a place in KCK that takes larger volumes of the block styrofoam. But by and large, it's not something that's really practically recyclable by the average person in here in the metro area, unfortunately. So
we've got a request for what to do with an old analog TV.
Well, it depends on the size. If it's 32 inches or smaller, it can go to a number of retailers that take electronic waste now in the metro area, and those include Best Buy, Staples, and Office Depot, Office Max stores. They all take e-waste, stuff that runs on a plug or a battery. So they will take old TVs, and there's a couple other places that take basically anything that runs on a plug or battery, and those include Midwest Recycling Center and Surplus Exchange. They take anything from, you know, like a little hearing aid all the way up to that old analog TV from your basement in the 1970s. So, but all those, everything I've mentioned is you can find it on our website, recyclespot.org. So if you're forgetting some of the details, just look it up on recyclespot.org.
What do you think should be the goal of our city's recycling program?
Like numerical goal?
You to define for me what you think the goal should be, whether it is quantitative or qualitative or some, mm-hmm. just from your own personal perspective.
I don't really have a number I attach to it. What I do a lot of presentations, and what I start off with is that we have to think about trash totally differently. First of all, trash is really resources waiting to be reused. You know, it's timber, it's minerals, it's whatever it is, but it needs to be reused and recycled versus thrown in the trash. But what I tell people is that when you think about the trash that you put out each week, most of what you are putting in your trash bag is actually reusable, recyclable, or compostable. So if you do a good job of reusing, recycling, and composting, you should have very little left in your trash bag to put out each week. So my goal for the region is to recycle as much as possible and throw out as little as possible.
You know, I wonder how far you think we are from that goal.
We have a ways to go. Like I said, when I started, we're 7 pounds of trash per person per day. So what we're trying to really get people to do is recycle more. So if a lot of people have access to your basic cans, paper bottles, curbside type recycling, but we're trying to get people to think outside that and think about what other types of things they can recycle, such as electronics, household hazardous waste, which includes paint and the fluorescent bulbs we spoke about, glass, metal. There's a lot broader range of things we can recycle.
We will come back to that later in the show. But as far as we have to go to catch up with what other metros or other regions are doing on recycling, Kansas City's actually come a really long way in a relatively short amount of time. We've only had curbside recycling for 15 years. So we will get some of that history from Bob Mann when we return. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR's Central Standard, where we're doing a look forward and a look back on recycling in Kansas City. We've been establishing what some goals for our metro might be as far as kind of playing catch-up on recycling, but we've already done quite a bit of playing catch-up. We're joined now by Bob Mann. He founded Bridging the Gap 25 years ago, and Bob, talk to me about the days before Bridging the Gap. Not that long ago, really, but what it was like in Kansas City. What year are we talking about?
1990, we had our first curbside ballot issue that failed, of course, in the city. And at that time, there really was only one recycling center, and it was a small center operated at Methodist Church. I think it was Central Methodist Church on Brookside. And actually,
so there was one place where you could physically go and recycle some things.
Yes, and it was all volunteers, and there was a big a semi there. And those of us who were volunteering would go collect those materials and put them in the back of the semi, and then when it was filled, it would be hauled off.
Hauled off to where?
There were a number of different places. It wasn't just really one place, but the challenge was that there really wasn't a system. We didn't have an infrastructure for recycling, and it actually closed. You know, Boy Scouts had been doing newspaper recycling for 50 years or more, but it was a very minimal quantity of materials. So when we lost the first curbside ballot issue, we then, with the support of Kansas City's Waste Minimization Commission, we opened our first drop-off center in Kansas City in July of 1991. And that was a great partnership of local government and the business community and citizen volunteers.
I want to get back to that, but I first want to kind of understand a little bit better the culture around recycling or the sort of prevalent thoughts around it at the very earliest stages. Because, you know, I lived in Kansas City at that time. I was like, you know, a preteen kind of at that point. But I do remember that there were some people who were passionate about recycling and they would go and do volunteering and stuff. But recycling is just part of the general atmosphere really didn't exist. I mean, you wouldn't walk down halls and encounter recycling bins or things like that. And it feels like other cities were not that way at that point. Am I remembering this wrong? I remember by the mid-90s, I went to college in New York, and that was the first time that, you know, in my dorms, there were recycling bins right alongside trash bins in every room and in the hallways and in the classrooms. And that was the first time I'd encountered that.
Well, I think you're absolutely right about what the culture was here in Kansas City in the early 1990s. It simply wasn't a part of our culture. Landfill costs were cheap. Disposal was the end of the trash was the least expensive and the cultural thing that we did. And that really was the difference, I think, that Bridging the Gap made in Kansas City, is that we really started teaching people why they should recycle, what the opportunities were for that.
And is it that you were not like part of that broader culture? I mean, what gave you this awareness that something needed to be different?
Well, I think there were some of those environmental zealots, we would call them. And they certainly affected me. They got under my skin and taught me a whole lot about waste, basically the waste. And, you know, I knew a little bit about it, but I didn't know a whole lot. My wife was a lot more active and cared a lot more about it than I did. She was a gardener and knew about nature and how nature worked a lot more than I did. But I think it was those initial zealots.
Would those people be considered mainstream today, or would we still call them zealots?
There definitely are still environmental zealots. I probably am one. But But most of those people are probably mainstream today. Recycling is mainstream today. It is what we expect. In your hallways at KCUR, there are recycling bins. But the core of that is always about teaching people how to do it. It is about education. And that is really the role that, first Bridging the Gap and now Mid-America Regional Council and lots of others have been about for the last 25 years.
So you you were one of the founders of Bridging the Gap. What gap? I mean, well, tell me about that name.
When I dreamed Bridging the Gap, my idea was, well, we'll fix this recycling problem first, and then we'll take on other gaps that exist in the community, whether that might be schools or health or whatever. Well, you know, naivete often helps dreams. And suddenly I found that, you know, this was going to take a long time, so it took us 14 years. But Bridging the Gap is not an environmental name. It literally is about connecting people and creating community.
What does community have to do with recycling? Help me understand that.
Well, first of all, it takes community to create the education. You can't just put up billboards and signs. It takes people, one-to-one kinds of interactions. It's those one-to-ones that create change. And I think community is depends upon synergies in organizations and individuals coming together and realizing the possibilities and what they can do together that they couldn't do separately.
You mentioned a failed ballot measure early on. There were a few of those, right?
Three.
Tell me about that time period and these efforts to get curbside recycling in Kansas City.
Well, we had a ballot issue in 1992, and then somewhere in the later in maybe 98 or 99, something like that. Always the ballot issues were really close. They would be, you know, 46-48% in favor and 50 or 52% against. And the real obstacle was the cost, because we were now asking of our waste industry, we were asking them to do two things, not just pick up your trash and take it to the landfill, but they had to pick up your recyclables separately, and then they had to find a way to process them and sell them and find markets for them. So there was a cost factor, and that had to be written in, and the community had to join in helping to pay for that.
Were you ever discouraged to the point of thinking, we're just never going to get this, we're going to have to find some other way to take on recycling in Kansas City?
No, I really believed in Kansas City a whole lot more than that.
So three times voted down, but then a fourth time it went?
Yes, and part of that was we learned to go about it a little bit different way. So it really didn't happen as a result of a ballot issue. But in 2003, 2004, we were successful in actually creating Kansas City's recycling program. An important part of that is that by the time we did it, we actually were more on the cutting edge in terms of how Kansas City went about recycling. And some of the same things that...
Wait, what do you mean by that? We were on the cutting edge suddenly?
Not in terms of how many people were doing it, but in terms of the model that we were using. So we were not trying to separate everything. By the same token, we were recognizing that glass was a contaminant in our recycling. And, you know, even today, there are all sorts of communities, and I live in one of those in Fort Collins, Colorado, where we still take glass in a single stream flow, and it still contaminates the other materials.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways, if you evaluate it outside of quantity, yeah, that's yay Kansas City.
Yeah, that's an important piece. I'd like to jump back to something Matt said. I do have a goal for recycling. And my goal is that we as individuals, as a species, that we learn to better model nature. In nature, there is absolutely no waste. Nature reuses everything. And we have that opportunity, too. And a lot of our industries are learning to do that. And as they do, instead of creating a cost for waste, they have new resources in the materials that are at their back door. And they actually can make money out of those.
Well, this is a good time, I think, to bring our other guest back in and to bring someone else, a guest we have not yet heard from, in on the conversation. First of all, Matt Riggs, the Matt that Bob just referred to from Mark. You've been with us for a while, the show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And it's great to be back.
Marlene Leonce from the city, from Kansas City's Solid Waste Division. You're the environmental officer there. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What would you say that are your goals for Kansas City, as long as we're hearing everyone's goal for our recycling program?
My goal for Kansas City is every one of our residents. We serve about 149,000 households. If every one of those households would put a recycling bin out there.
We aren't there yet?
No, we're not.
How far are we from it?
About 60% of residents put out recycling bins.
Why do you think 40% of people don't?
Most people feel that it's there's a barrier. It's too much trouble. It's too much work. Sometimes it's an education barrier, just not enough information as to the benefits of recycling.
What's the city doing about that education barrier? I mean, we heard that Bob was saying actually earlier that community is required for education. Do you think that's true, that it has to be a person-to-person thing?
Definitely. Community is very important in the recycling participation goals. Sometimes it takes one neighbor to ask another, hey, why is there three bags out on your curb? Where's your recycling bin? A simple conversation can educate your residents and promote recycling in Kansas City.
How do you recommend people do that? I mean, that confronting a neighbor who does not appear to be recycling could backfire. I mean, it could create bad blood. I'm sure there's a way to do it politely, but I'm not sure I know what it is.
Well, safety first, right? We don't want anyone out there confronting their neighbor regarding recycling. I say we encourage our residents to get involved in their neighborhood associations. And through your neighborhood associations, the city provide outreach where we will come out and tell you about our recycling program, tell you the things you can recycle. In some cases, if there's a cost issue for attainment of the recycling bin, we may provide you with a recycling bin. So our job as a city is to remove as many barriers as possible to recycling.
You know, Bob, I want to bring us back to the point where in our city's history where we actually got curbside recycling. You know, this ballot measure goes through. Can you tell me about how things changed at that moment? I mean, we've gotten in the less than 15 years, actually, since then. This is 2004. We've gotten to 60% of households actually using the bins. So I'm guessing that right at first, it was even lower than that. How did that transition happen? How did people respond?
Well, I think, first of all, people responded wonderfully in Kansas City. That there was this pent-up desire for recycling. And I can remember standing outside when the first recycling trucks came by and you know, picked up the bins, and we looked up and down the street. And at that time, I lived in Squire Park on Tracy, and I looked out at my neighbors, and almost everybody had their bins out. And that was such an exciting moment. So I think part of that really is that there was a lot of promotion at that time. You know, something new has happened, and so you have that promotion thing. So you have kind of an early peak, and then you have kind of a falling back, and you have new people moving in and changing homes and, you know, that sort of thing. But I think we started with a very high number for a community that had no curbside program for 15 years before that.
Was there anything that surprised you about the way people actually adopted or didn't adopt curbside recycling or other parts of your efforts?
I think maybe the most surprising thing to me was that when the program first started, the resounding thing that we heard was, we need more bins for our recyclables. Because people suddenly discovered that if they really recycled everything that was in the recycling stream, they didn't need so much trash, but they needed another recycling bin.
Matt, you were part of this history too. What surprised you, or what do you really take away from this past experience, these early days?
Well, I remember that at the time when it rolled out, Bridging the Gap actually was working with the city to do education. So basically there was, I think it was an ambassador program, mm-hmm. where you'd have like a neighborhood ambassador who was the person in your neighborhood who was kind of the recycling go-to person, who could explain about the program, how it works, what you need to get a bin, what items go, what items don't. And I remember it, in the neighborhood I lived in at the time, I actually went door to door, let people know about it. I went and spoke at our homeowners association. So I think that kind of grassroots outreach that we had at that time was a new thing. And I think that really woke people up and reached a lot of people. So my hope is that at some point we can get kind of back to that grassroots level where every neighborhood has somebody they can go to or who will speak at their homeowners association or is willing to go door to door. Because I thought that was a really great way to go about it.
Marlene, how have things changed since 2004 in Kansas City?
In terms of recycling, as Matt mentioned earlier, early on, it has created several jobs, and we now generate revenue from the recycling. We've seen residents become more aware of recycling in that some of them, they try to recycle everything. For example, most residents think that plastic shopping bags is a recyclable item and can be put on the curb. However, it should not be placed in your recycling bin. You can take it to either Price Chopper or Walmart or even a Hy-Vee, and it can be recycled there. So residents have become more zealous about recycling, and they try to recycle everything, but not, as I referenced earlier, not everything can be recycled on the curb.
You know, what would you identify as our problem areas as a region or a city when it comes to recycling now?
Wow, great question. I think our problem areas, when I think of the areas with the lowest participation goals, I would say an education campaign, going back to the basics and saying, here's what our recycling program is like, and this is what you should or can do. So basic education.
What about workplace recycling? I've heard that that's kind of a problem in Kansas City, that the workplace hasn't necessarily caught up with the residential curbside.
It has not, but it is getting there. We have most of our trash haulers now do provide recycling to their clients. We now have two material recovery facility in the metro area instead of one. So we're getting there incrementally, but we're getting there.
Matt Riggs, this is part of what you're really working on. Can you tell us what the problem is? What's the holdup?
Well, it goes back to really awareness and education. Most businesses that haven't ever thought about recycling, that's the problem, is they've never thought about it. And once we go out and talk to businesses and different organizations and get them thinking about it, they're like, oh, I didn't. It's more like a wow experience. Like, I didn't realize that all this stuff could be recycled. And now that I do, how do I go about it? And I think that's where our Recycle More at Work campaign really helps, as we go out and that's our effort to go out and work with businesses one-on-one. And we not only provide them with information about recycling, but we do like a walkthrough where we help them figure out what's recyclable, what's not. You know, we look at their trash bins, we look at their signage, so all the logistical issues. Then we do like a staff lunch and learn where we reach out to the staff and talk, do a presentation to them. We provide a written report that kind of lays out the next steps for them. So it's really kind of a one-on-one thing. And so it's more than just like calling up a business and say, hey, why don't you guys recycle? It's really getting in there, making that one-on-one connection with somebody on their staff and really getting them to think about there are other options than just throwing it all in the dumpster, trash dumpster.
Do we have similar hang-ups when it comes to curbside recycling? I mean, something that has come to my attention is the way that curbside recycling program gets and maintains its funding. It seems like there might be a little chicken and egg kind of problem in there.
Right. Well, I think in our region, there's kind of a prevailing thought that recycling should be a free service. Like, why do I have to pay for this? But we try to get people to think about it as like any other utility. I mean, you pay for your electricity, your gas, your water, your trash. And when you're saying, why should I have to pay more to recycle? Well, as Bob mentioned earlier, you're asking them to do an additional procedure. It's not just throw it in a bag and throw it in a hole. It's now we have to separate stuff out, put them in their correct categories, bale them, process them, send them elsewhere. That all requires extra time and resources that somebody has to do that. And you're not going to get somebody to do that for free. So you have to pay a company to do that service. And kind of, so what it all comes down to really is cost and convenience. You know, if they're given a very convenient option like curbside, it's the most convenient. If you give them a convenient option and the cost is going to be there, but you make it reasonable. It's just about having a reasonable cost. You don't want people to think, oh, that's outrageous. I can't pay that. But if it's reasonable, then people, generally, most people are willing to pay that little extra to make sure that the right thing happens to their waste material.
Please forgive me if I've misunderstood something, but does funding for curbside recycling, is that affected by how much we do or don't send to landfills?
It's really affected by the markets for the recycled materials. Like right, the markets for recycled materials go up and down like any other economic market. Right now, the market for materials is very low value because the price of oil, because of the, we used to do a lot of, send a lot of our recyclables to China. They've changed their trade policies. So recyclables are an all-time low value. So there's been some instances where people have to, you know, 10 years ago, you could get rebates for some of the recyclable streams from the companies because they're making enough money on paper materials and metals that they could actually give you a rebate, like with a lot of school programs and stuff. Well, now that's flipped because there's very little value in the recycling market right now. So they're saying, okay, in order to maintain the service, you're going to have to pay us versus us paying you. So,
well, when KCUR Central Standard returns, we're going to find out maybe what the lessons of the past could teach us and how to tackle some of the present day problems. But we're also going to take a couple more questions about those things sitting around your house that you don't know how to recycle. 816-235-2888 after this break. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, sitting here with Marlene Leonce, Senior Environmental Officer from the City of Kansas City, Missouri. We've got Bob Mann with us. He's a founder of Bridging the Gap. He's back in town for the 25th anniversary of that organization. And Matt Riggs is here from the Mid-America Regional Council. Welcome back, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're talking about recycling, and before we get to some of the bigger messages out of this show, we do have some details still that our listeners would like help with, details in the forms of things they want to recycle. So, you guys, we have a listener who wants to recycle old X-rays. Is it possible?
Not in our metro area. There, you know, most X-rays are not something that's in your average resident's hand. It would be more in a medical, like a doctor's office or a hospital. And they, those places have places that accept old X-rays to recycle. So if this is somebody,
I got that, a guy who's got a guy who can help you with that.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, the short answer would be, would, if you have a few X-rays, next time you go to the doctor or hospital, say, can I put these in with yours? Because I have no place to recycle them as a resident.
What about bubble wrap?
Bubble wrap, first of all, if you don't have a lot of it, you should keep it around because you're always sending something in the mail that it can be reused for. So reuse is one option. But bubble wrap is basically the same kind of plastic as the recyclable sheet and bags so that you take to like the grocery stores and big box stores. So actually you could recycle it with your plastic bags and film at your average Walmart or grocery store that takes plastic bags.
What about butcher paper?
Butcher paper, gosh.
Usually waxy on one side.
Right. I would say as long as it's paper, it could be composted. So if you have a backyard compost bin, you can recycle basically any kind of paper that has had any kind of food contact. So like fast food wrappers, fast food bags, napkins, coffee filters, butcher paper, those kind of things can all go in a backyard compost bin.
All right. So back to some of the bigger questions that are that we're facing about recycling, but not just recycling, just what to do with, I don't know, consumption and waste and the dangerous effects of that whole way we kind of live. I mean, first of all, Marlene, are there parts of the city where you see real success, where you see people managing their waste really effectively?
Definitely. The city is divided into three core areas, the north, the core, and the south. In the Northland, we have a higher recycling rate than the core as compared to the south also. So definitely. And again, it's a lot of awareness and education.
What about, you know, there's this longtime credo that's been out there, the reduce, reuse, recycle. How are we doing on those first two?
Well, in speaking with residents, I tell my suggestion to them is when you go to the grocery store, you have to be intentional. If you know you do not like to go to a ripple glass bin, find your product that's in a plastic jar instead of a glass. Because if you do not want to go to the ripple glass bin and glass is not recycled on the curb, then you may tend not to recycle it. So when you're going to the grocery store, be intentional about the products you're bringing back to your house.
Or you can save it till you're in a bad mood. That's what I do. It feels really good.
So that's how you reduce what you bring home. Then we have reuse. We have several reuse stores in the metro area. You can take some of those products too. So that's a good option also. Recycling really, at the end of the day, is your last option, you know, if you're intentional about what you purchase at the stores.
You guys, I'm curious. I mean, especially those of you who were part of these early struggles to just get the very most basic recycling on the radar of how Kansas City thinks and behaves. Is there something a lesson that you learned through that process that can help us get to this next step with workplace recycling, with those other two R's, the reducing and reusing, with the education gap on what is and isn't recyclable and how to do it? What are the lessons that might help us in making these next steps?
One of those might be to look at grocery stores, for example. Grocery stores have been recycling corrugated for years and years, and the reason is they get paid for it, or at the very least, they don't have to pay somebody to haul it off as trash. So the economic piece is important at a business, you know, kind of level, but it's also important at the individual home. If you really reduce the amount of waste that you create and or if you reuse it, then you also have a lower economic cost. So I think cost is a piece of it. And we shouldn't forget that thrift stores are reuse. It's not just restore.
You know, Matt, we have a caller and we don't have time to take the call, but the caller wants to know if you are the Matt Riggs who does Green Elvis.
I am, baby.
So I want to ask Green Elvis if he has anything to say.
Let me get him here. Hold on a second. Yeah, come over.
How's it going, man? Yeah, I'm Eco Elvis. I'm Kansas City's environmentally friendly Elvis, and I'm here to get the whole region shook up about recycling more and taking care of our planet. So I do shows all over the metro area for churches, schools, conferences, you name it. I'll come and I'll play for you.
Eco Elvis, are your shoes suede or do you prefer another material?
I prefer boots that I buy at the thrift store that I paint with a bright green paint.
So no blue suede shoes for
no,
you?
No, no blue suede shoes. Baby, no.
Why do you do this?
I think of it as a way to help educate people in a way that's fun. People tend to remember things that are fun. So if you go out and you joke around with them, you play some songs for them, and I'm actually about 8 feet tall in my costume, so people tend to remember some giant guy in a crazy green jumpsuit.
They sure do. Okay, and as for items and whether they're recyclable, there's one that comes up a lot in our modern world, and that is pizza boxes. So I need the final verdict. Pizza boxes, can you recycle them?
Pizza boxes are entirely recyclable if you have a compost bin in your backyard. You can tear the top off, the clean top, recycle it in your recycling bin, and compost the dirty bottom in your compost bin. If you don't have a compost bin, you do have to throw out the dirty bottom of the pizza box.
But you can recycle the sides?
You can recycle the clean top. Mm-hmm.
Marlene, are Kansas Cityans good composters?
We're getting there.
Well, our time is up for this conversation about recycling. Marlene Leonce, Bob Mann, Matt Riggs, thank you all so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/Central Standard later today. Tomorrow, politics have taken to the streets, and we're curious about the protests going on in Kansas and Missouri. If you've been joining in, we want to know if you feel like you're part of a cohesive movement of some kind and whether you think that matters. Tomorrow at 10, KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan with Caitlin Troutman. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.